G'day, this is Tom Uren of Seriously Risky Business fame, and I'm here today with the Grok.
Hello, good to see you.
First of all, I'd like to thank the Cyber Initiative at the Hewlett Foundation and also founding corporate sponsors Proofpoint for their support. Today we thought we'd talk about the dilemmas or the difficulties of integrating cyber operations into tactical military operations. Like, so how do you get troops on the front line the cybers that they need? And when I was working at ASPE, the Combined Arms Training Group actually came and got me to give them a talk about what offensive cyber was all about. And the interesting thing to me was that they couldn't get someone from within the defense organization to talk to them about it and give them probably a more educated view of what the defense organization was thinking because of the secrecy. It seems like a good topic to discuss. There's a kind of trade-off inherent there. And so we'll...
Yeah,
go on.
Yeah, no, it's just because, like, I think there's a lot of threads to pull on here. That the secrecy issue, you know, how do you get a classified capability to someone who's going to be on the front lines and who doesn't have clearance? There's that aspect. There's the, what exactly do you do? I mean, like, how do you cyber in a way that's going to help the door kickers and so on? There's sort of how does the organization itself, like the military, how do they see cyber, and do they understand it as a thing that can help them, as a line item that gets them more budget, as something that I wish would go away so that they could get back to like the real fighting that they train for?
Yeah, the people I spoke to, they were very interested. They really wanted to know what it was about and how they could use it. And the talk they gave actually quite impressed me. They had someone who had a kind of scenario that they ran through Metasploit. So they were not totally ignorant. In fact, the opposite. I thought they'd done quite well educating themselves. But they also still, like, how does that apply on the battlefield?
Right.
And I guess you look at the invasion of Ukraine, and it applied through wipers and also through the hack of Viasat that we've talked about. But it doesn't seem to me that it's been integrated every day of the war, not in a way that I can see anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a few things, and this is, I guess, another issue to talk about, which is the where is cyber in the org chart, which is a bureaucracy thing that we've mentioned before. Because if you're using cyber on the battlefield, then cyber needs to be sort of pushed down towards the levels that they're doing the planning and so on for the battlefield operations. It can't be really high up because the length of time, you know, like if you're a lieutenant with, you know, your platoon, and, you know, the company boss says, go and take that building. That lieutenant can't say, okay, you know, I'm going to just put a request up into brigade headquarters and they're going to check with Army to see if it's possible to have some cyber capabilities assigned to us. Then they're going to decide what we can do. And, you know, like, that's obviously not going to work. You need someone who's going to be there and say, all right, I can take out the lights, the CCTV. I can make sure that the elevators stop running.
You know, yeah, this is the Mission Impossible scenario where you've got Simon Pegg on standby.
Right. I mean, the thing is, like, you either need someone pretty much at the thin edge of the wedge, or it's not going to work, right? It's going to be part of a larger battle plan, like that initial invasion where they had these big set-piece operations that they were doing. That made sense. But tactically now, they can't really do anything because it's just such a long command line. And yeah. I think that's one of the things is it's, you know, they've had trouble themselves dealing with this issue of how do you push the capability knowledge down to the end where it can be used.
So when you say they, you're talking about the Russians.
No, yep. Yeah, this would be the Russians in this case, because they've got their particular org style doesn't sort of favor the front line.
Yeah, but I'm also not sure, and I guess this is what we're talking about really, is whether cyber capabilities can ever really be used tactically. And so the example that comes to mind, the US has talked about, where they said that they disrupted communications at a ISIS command post. They knew that the command post existed, and they stopped the communications working. Maybe they were using Android phones or something. And the reason they did that was that they knew that there were secondary command posts, but they didn't know where they were. And so that forced the fighters there to disperse. They had surveillance on them, so they could see mm-hmm. them. And then they were able to blow up the secondary command posts.
Right.
And so that's a tactical use. But my understanding was that they were not happy with how long it took to plan. So it took many weeks. And so in the context of a fight against a non-peer adversary, you can afford weeks sometimes. But in a real war, in a war against a peer, you would go, no, we'll just blow up that primary post and figure it out later.
Right. Right. And I mean, I think that in a way speaks to the, I guess, another thing that we haven't touched on, which is that the military favors sort of like aggressive responses. There's things like, you know, a mediocre plan executed with violence and intent now is better than a perfect plan tomorrow.
Yeah.
And cyber doesn't really lend itself to that for a couple of reasons. One is it can be quite slow, as we mentioned, which, I mean, it seems paradoxical, right? Like, everyone's always like, iPhone hacked in 15 seconds. It's like, well, yeah, 6 months of R&D and then 15 seconds of execution, you know?
Yeah, the computer part is quite fast, but the human part is very slow.
Yeah, like all the prep time, and then, you know, when it actually goes, it's very quick. And so there's that, but it's also like it's not necessarily violent in a way that is satisfying to someone who's used to explosions. A warheads on foreheads kind of guy is probably not going to be super thrilled when you're like, we can really interfere with his Twitch stream.
Yeah, and I guess the example I gave, my impression from just the reporting I've read is that the war was being conducted or planned a long way from the battlefield. And so that operation was planned like back at headquarters. It wasn't, you know, someone on the ground saying, hey, I need something to disrupt the phones or whatever they're using.
Yeah. And if you think about it, we've got two issues here that we're thinking of. One is, what are the things that could be done if you were on the ground? And the other thing is, how would someone on the ground have access to those things?
Yep.
So, right, you know, your lieutenant shoots a lot, and you want to get your cyber guy assisting your assault in some way. What could he possibly do that will make it better for you when you need to seize a trench? Probably not much, right? If you are taking a village, maybe things are different, right? Maybe, for example, there might be exposed CCTV, like Wi-Fi, IP camera, something, where you could say, like, I've hacked all of the ring things and I can give you a reconnaissance ability on certain areas that, you know, they won't be aware of, right? So maybe there's that. That could be useful.
Yeah, that does seem like a scenario where if you knew that you could do that easily and quickly, well, I guess that kind of intelligence would be useful, but I don't know whether you have time
No, I mean, like, think about it. If you're assaulting a village, it would be useful to know, is there a bunch of troops inside this particular house or that particular house?
Yeah, yeah. It'd definitely be useful to know beforehand, yeah.
Right. It's the sort of thing that could help you during the planning phase to have additional information.
Yep.
But it's sort of hard to think of what else, you know, besides just that intelligence collection capability, right? So, like, the wipers and things like that, on the one hand, I feel like those are very, they're boring. It's sort of like if you went to a military person and said, what are cyber things that you would want to do? And then they would think, I want to replicate a bomb hitting a target of interest for me. And so you do a wiper and it sort of replicates the bomb hitting something. It's boring, but it's also, it's a bit more predictable than, for example, you know, messing with the bank system to cause a stampede or like a run on a bank that would then tie up the road system so that there'd be some sort of, where you're banking on these sort of like second order effects, for example.
Yeah, but they also, and I guess this is also what we're talking about, is whether cyber operations are kind of a strategic thing or a tactical thing. And those kind of effects seem somewhat big picture to me.
Yeah.
And I guess there's different uses of the word strategic. And by this, I mean something that's having a broader effect, not
right.
sort of a battlefield effect, I guess.
Yeah, no, like the cyber and strategic stuff, it always makes sense. You know, cyber at a tactical level, it's very confusing to me what you could actually do until we get to like laser guns that are connected to the internet and you could, you know, disrupt the other side's weaponry, you know.
Yeah, so I was thinking about what would change this paradigm, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the problems we've discussed or identified is that you need to keep the capabilities secret, because if you tell too many people, the other side can find out, and they're usually really easy to fix, relatively right. easy fix compared to protecting yourself against a tank.
Right, right.
Or a bomb.
Yeah.
And so one thing that occurs is that just being in a war may change your sort of risk-benefit calculus. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe for the Ukrainians, not that I'm seeing any evidence of this, but that if there were some cyber capabilities that you could use, you might tell people more broadly. Do you kind of agree with that, or is that totally off base?
I think there's value in that. And there's the you know, when you're facing an existential threat, you know, saving something for a rainy day doesn't make sense because this is that rainy day.
Yeah,
like it's raining. It's time to, you know, pull out all the stops. So yeah, I could see that, but I also think that, you know, simply telling someone about something is not necessarily going to be enough, right? So if you do take,
right, yeah.
you know, if you take your lieutenant, he's in charge of his platoon, he wants to know what you could do, and you say, look, don't tell anyone, but we've got this really cool Linux TCP/IP stack, RCE, that, you know, works on any 4.x and up to 5.9.
Yeah.
You know, that might be super secret. It's not necessarily going to be very helpful.
Yeah. So I guess you've got to go a bit beyond that and say, and that particular,
yeah.
you know, that configuration is actually used in their mobile infantry or something.
Right. Like all of their SAM systems are exposed. So if you can get to within, you know, half a kilometer and use the Wi-Fi gun, we can take out one of their SAM systems, which is probably useful for the flyboys who need to give you close air support. So
yeah, well, I guess the
like
way
that makes,
well, I was just going to say, sorry, that I think people are thinking that the battlefield will become more and more networked. So there'll be more and more networked armored vehicles, tanks, and they'll all be talking to each other, and there may be some opportunity there. Do you think that's a realistic scenario?
I think it's plausible in that anything is possible.
Uh-huh.
yeah, I think there's going to be all sorts of issues with it. Like you're going to have to do like EW stuff just to get on the links, because it's all going to be over like data link, over, you know, frequency hopping encrypted crazy stuff that doesn't get jammed. Then once you've done that, you're going to have to break encryption. Like I think it's just going to be super difficult compared to, for example, shooting a missile at something.
Yeah, like I agree as well. I think when you really, really care about something, it is possible to make it very, very difficult to hack. And for those kinds of systems, that would be one of the priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably easier just to jam them rather than...
Right. You know, figure out a way to do an EMP against something, you know. Like, disruption in other ways would be not only simpler but possibly more effective, in that it would be reliable. Because I think this is one of the other elephants in the room that we haven't spoken about. I mean, like when we get to tactical cyber, it's basically all elephants and all rooms. So like one of the other ones is that militaries kind of like repeatable things that they can kind of rely on. So for example, if you have a kilo of C4, it will do what a kilo of C4 does, right? It's going to produce this much explosion, whether you put it underwater, next to a bridge, under a pile of dirt, you know, on top of a tank, whatever. That's not the case if you've got an exploit, right? Like if you've got a cyber capability and you try and use it against something, well, you know, did they patch? Are they on the right architecture? Do they have the right version? Do you have the latest version? Becomes like not necessarily C4, but like you're using your C4.2.7.9-SP3 against DOR version, you know, 17.SP7. a rock is more reliable.
Yeah,
than
yeah.
Bitcoin in this case. So I hesitate to say that cyber is useful for tactical stuff. I don't want to say it's not useful, because I think there's scenarios we haven't imagined, things are changing, etc. But strategically, it makes so much sense. Tactically, it's really difficult to thread that needle. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So I guess one thing I wanted to say is that it's easy to imagine that you have some cyber operation that gets you intelligence that you can use tactically. Like that's easy to imagine. We're really sort of considering the, could you use it in concert with conventional sort of military?
So here's the thing, is like, I think the scenarios where it makes more sense is stuff for special forces, right? Where you've got an operation that is a little bit more half espionage, half military operation.
It involves a lot of planning and...
Yeah, planning, having some deception and stealth capability can be more valuable than, you know, brute force or whatever. Or even necessarily speed, for example. So one scenario might be like, we make fun, or I particularly make fun of, you know, turning out the lights, you know, disable the grid as a capability. I think it's dumb. But, for example, if you are deploying a special forces unit into a city and you want to give them an edge, it could be useful to turn the lights out where they happen to be before they go live, because you know, that would give them a tactical edge where they are prepared for that and the opposition is not.
At the right time and right place.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, that's a planning thing, right? Like, it's not a...
Do you make fun of turning off the lights?
Well, I just, in general, using it as a strategic capability is dumb. So if we look historically, I'm not sure, but I do believe that for a fairly long period of time, people were able to survive without electricity. You know, like there's some historical precedent for that.
Oh, yeah, but it's terrible. Even if the internet goes out, it's terrible.
Oh,
it's like...
right. No, but you know, it's worse than the internet going out. The internet being slow. Slow internet is worse than no internet. But so here's the thing, right? If you turn out the lights without it being part of something else, like if you turn it out because you want to make it for, special forces, whatever, that makes sense. If you turn it out because you're trying to threaten a population, right, in 8 hours, okay, let's, worst case, you know, it takes a day, a full day, which is fairly unlikely, given what we've seen, but whatever. You know, even 2 or 3 days, it doesn't actually matter. The electricity is going to come back and people will be angry at you.
To me, it makes sense when combined with something else where you've got the sort of time and place aspect where it needs to be now or whenever, and also we'd like it to come back. Otherwise, we'd just blow the substation up or whatever.
Well, like look at what Russia is doing in Ukraine now. We know that they can take out the Ukrainian electrical grid. You know, they've done it before. They failed a bit earlier with their Indestroyer, but in theory, they could do it if they wanted to. They're using missiles, right?
Yeah.
They're using missiles to go after substations, because blowing up a substation is a lot harder to fix than if you have to reboot a computer.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that sort of speaks to the why it makes sense as an augmentation or an enabler or a support function, but it doesn't make sense as a dedicated thing. So here's something we haven't considered either, is that if you get to the point where you're dealing with a near peer, they probably also have cyber capabilities and the battlefield is a place of deception, etc. It might be worthwhile to have vulnerable systems set up that you can look at, and if it, for example, goes offline, you can go, okay, the attack is about to start. You know, or you could
right, yeah, honeypots and tar pits and all that sort of stuff.
Right, yeah, you could use a sort of a tripwire or something. You know, you could probably create a system that literally shoots up a flare.
You know, right. Actually, that does seem like the most useful thing we've.
There you go, free ideas, right?
And also something that you could do in advance and just forget about, and you don't expect anything from it. If it pays off, it's like, oh.
Yeah, and it can be, you know, with an on-off switch, so that, you know, your average grunt, your average infantryman can just deploy it, turn it on. It either works or it doesn't. And if it does work, good. And if it doesn't, then whatever. Mm. Such is life. Now that we brought it up, I think that probably is the most useful cyber capability you could possibly have on the battlefield.
Something that just possibly slightly distracts the enemy.
Right. Yeah. Or, I mean, if you have like IP cams that, you know, that broadcast recorded footage that you make earlier.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess nowadays, actually, it seems like it's possible that you could broadcast whatever footage you like and you just get a computer to make it up.
Yeah.
The thing I saw was some Google system where you would tell it what you wanted to see as a video. And so the example I saw was a teddy bear washing the dishes. And like, well, it doesn't look real, but then, of course, teddy bears don't wash the dishes. But
it's like my teddy bear washing the dishes, that's for sure.
it to me seems entirely plausible that you could say, I want to pretend that there's an IP camera at this location, have it sort of construct a street scene and then put whatever you like in it. And the problem seems to me to be, what's the military value in there? and I guess there must be scenarios where if you're expecting a kind of a ground battle that maybe that works. I don't know.
So like let's look at the sort of how command is going to look at cyber capabilities, because we've mentioned quite a lot of sort of shortcomings, and to someone who is not necessarily like deeply steeped in the law that like at some point cyber is really going to be important, trust us, they might not be convinced that like it's worth dealing with this extra head in the planning room coming up with dumb ideas, especially someone who's never been to ranger school, who hasn't paid their dues in the right way to get to that level.
Yeah. So to me, I think the best example of combining cyber operations with real warfare is the Viasat hack. And so there's conflicting accounts of how impactful that was, but it basically seems to have taken out satellite comms for the Ukrainian military, which I think is very, very significant. And so that's the kind of capability I think that you would look for. And I think in this case, it gave the Russian military an enduring advantage for some time that they just weren't able to take full advantage of. And maybe that seems to me to be a very plausible attack. And that type of attack, I think, will remain plausible for quite a long time because satellites just don't turn over that quickly. They're like a long-term infrastructure of decades.
And if the enemy doesn't do it, Elon Musk will, just so he can sell more Starlinks.
Oh, and no. The other... And I think there's also opportunities in telcos as well. It seems that, you know, all the time telcos get breached. And I think a competent actor could disrupt a telco. And probably, I would think, in quite a tailored way. And so if you could do both at the same time, and there, for some reason, you know, there's a conventional operation in a time and space that you want to disrupt those as methods of communication for the other side, I think that's fairly straightforward.
Yeah, so telcos are very interesting because for quite a long time, telephones became the comms channel of choice for both sides. By necessity for the Ukrainians and I believe the Russians as well, like the Russian radios didn't work as well as they were supposed to, and the Ukrainian radios were being jammed, and their satellite link was offline for some reason. So everyone was basically using mobile phones. And what the Ukrainians were doing, because they had legitimate access to the telcos, they were able to look for what they called spring flowers. So spring flowers are where there's an empty field, suddenly a flower blooms out of nowhere. So these would be Russian mobile phones that suddenly appear on Ukrainian telco networks.
Yeah.
Right. Or things that just sort of appear all of a sudden. And they'd go, all right, what else is in this region? Let's shell there. And so they were using that for tactical artillery striking. Like it was used as an intelligence collection mechanism. So that makes a lot of sense to me. One of the things I just saw yesterday was that apparently 4,000 base stations have been destroyed.
Right.
So the Russians, and it's a war, things get destroyed. But yeah, there's deliberate targeting of infrastructure that could be used. I think we're coming down on cyber is really good if you're at the planning phase and you can put time into it and figure out, you know, here are things we can do that can help for this big operation.
It's, yeah, I'm not sure I'd say really good, but I think there's definitely opportunities.
Right.
That's the space for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'll walk back really good. So yeah, cyber has a place. You can find things to do with it there, but it's really hard once you increase the tempo.
Yep.
I think, and once you narrow the focus to, you know, a smaller operation or a smaller unit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also when you compare it to bombs and bullets.
Right.
Like the more the bombs and bullets become the key factor, the less cyber.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a proportional ratio, right? They're inversely proportional. You know, when it gets down to the point of like an individual bullet matters, cyber is less relevant. But when it's down to the point of our ammunition expenditure for these hours is expected to be this many tons. If you're planning at that level, you're probably at a level where you could consider whether cyber can assist in some way.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot, Gruff. Good chatting to you.
Excellent.